G'day, welcome back to English History Fact and Fiction episode, the 331st, America Part 2, and I hope, my dear listener, that you are ready to fight for freedom and democracy. We must always be vigilant against the axis of evil who wish to... let's get on with it.
Do you hear the people sing, singing the song of angry men? It is the music of a people who will not be slaves again. When the beating of your heart echoes the beating of the drums, there is a life about to start when tomorrow comes. Will you join in our crusade? Who will be strong and stand with me? Beyond the barricade, is there a world you long to see? Then join in the fight that will give you the right to be free.
Last week we checked in on America to see how that shining light on the hill was going. Send us your poor, your tired and whatever. And those poor were sent so that they could be poor somewhere else, not here. That'd be great, thanks. We found things going terribly badly for the locals, the indigenous population, whose numbers were going down the dunny. Yeah, they're dying in droves. Things are also going terribly badly for humans who were black, even though their population numbers were going up. That was just because we were importing more and more of the buggers so that they could do all the shit work and die young. And we found things were going terribly badly for the vast majority of your common or garden variety white people because we were also importing more and more of them. Just like everywhere else, there were a few super wealthy people and they were getting wealthier while the poor were getting poorer. But before you know it, we will have these abstract ideas called freedom and democracy to fight and die for. Stupid us. So, going to America is not going to solve problems for poor people any time soon. Still in they come. Scotties, Irish, and German immigrants. Black humans are pouring in. By 1770, black humans made up 21% of the population. The overall population was around about 1.6 million at that time. Agriculture was growing. Manufacture was developing. Shipping and trading expanding. The big cities were doubling and tripling in size. The wealthy are getting wealthier and continue their monopoly of political power. The top 1% of the wealthy have 44% of the wealth. Don't worry, that'll just continue to increase. Also increasing was the percentage of poor people. Every town and city by now has a poor house. In New York, an almshouse built for 100 humans has got 400 humans living in the thing. Here's a quote from Philadelphia. It is remarkable what an increase of the number of beggars there is about town this winter. And the gap between rich and poor continues to grow. Let's have a mob kill the Lieutenant Governor of Massachusetts. 19th of May, 1713, big food shortage heading into winter. The price of food will increase bigly, very bigly. Andrew Belcher, wealthy merchant, is helping prices to rise by exporting his grain to the Caribbean. There is more profit to be made there. There will be a riot with the mob breaking into Belcher's warehouses looking for corn, and that silly Lieutenant Governor will try to interfere and so will be made dead. This is just one story, but my dear listener, there are many, many stories like it. That and strikes, where our workers feel that, oddly enough, they are not getting a decent deal. And they weren't. Now, Americans can riot over the draft for men to be pressed into naval service. The sheriff will be beaten up, the deputy sheriff locked up, and the mob will storm the house where the general court sat. Call out the militia, but the militia says, "Oh no, fuck you," and the governor will run away. A merchant's group will identify the mob as a riotous, tumultuous assembly of foreign seamen, servants, negroes, and other persons of mean and vile condition. Yeah, I would think it was mainly other persons of mean and vile condition, which is poor white people. We can riot over land. There's a bunch of poor farmers who reckon they own their land. Wealthy landowners also say, "Oh, we own that land, so we want rent." Samuel Baldwin held an Indian title to his patch. but that was not acknowledged, and he'll be arrested for non-payment of rent and popped in a slammer. The mob will pop him straight back out. The authorities will call for volunteers to help them disperse the mob, and nobody will come out. We'll have Queen Anne's War in the early 1700s and King George's War in the 1730s, and some American merchants can make nice fortunes in those wars, but for most people it meant higher taxes, unemployment and poverty. By the time we start on our revolution, the wealthy elite who controlled the colony had 150 years' experience and had learned how to rule the place. The Indians aren't any good as a workforce and are seen as just an obstacle to expansion. The black guys were easier to control, but we've now imported so many of them, we're just a little bit worried about a possible slave rebellion. They've got some decent numbers if they did decide to rebel. So we've got Indian hostility and the danger of slave revolts, and now, as we've seen, there is anger amongst the poor white common smellies. The indentured servants, the tenants, the city poor, the people without property, taxpayers, soldiers and sailors. The gap between rich and poor has increased and violence is on the rise and control is becoming a little bit problematic. Yeah, we need to focus them. If poor people decided to combine with the black humans and Indians, then it would be curtains for the wealthy elite. That's happening down in South America, but it's mainly down there, it's due to a shortage of females. Europeans then are finding Indian women in the south. In the north of America, we do have some incidents where white people go off to join the locals, the indigenous people, or we find kiddies who might have been captured by Indians and been brought up by them. In those cases, the European, if given a chance to return to the white culture, would invariably say, "Oh no, thank you, it will be the Indian culture for me." Is way happier. But the combining of the three groups of humans, that is Indians, blacks and poor whites, is pretty unlikely. The wealthy elite had learned from Bacon's Rebellion, and the same tactic is being used. That is, tell the common smellies that they can have a bit of dirt out on the frontier, and sure, you might have to kill some Indians to get it, but that's okay by us. So long as you keep them busy out there somewhere, we can be nice and safe making money on the eastern seaboard. That still leaves the problem that perhaps black humans could combine with Indians to give us a hard time. It actually happened in 1712, but that was quickly suppressed. They just can't get the numbers all organised at the same time. Mind you, it's not all champagne and reefers in all parts. In Carolina, there are 25,000 whites with 40,000 blacks and 60,000 Indians hanging around. Great vigilance is needed there. Policies to keep the mobs divided will keep the wealthy elite in control. Laws are passed to keep freed black humans from travelling to Indian country. Treaties with Indians include clauses that they must return runaway slaves. Black slaves are put in the militia to fight Indians. That will work for a bit, but soon we'll start to become concerned about just how many of those black people we've given guns to, so the militia idea for them will be quashed. Black guys did manage to do a runner here and there, with the Creeks and Cherokees saying, "Hey, come on in, settle down, marry, raise kiddies, and just chill." But the Indians will be bribed and that practice will stop. The wealthy elite can now start to worry whether poor white people may team up with poor black people. Oh gee, yeah, that'll be a bit nasty for us. Well, we can promote a bit of racism to help out there. Ooh, that is, we white people are superior. Why then would we team up with the inferior black people? Despite that, there was sexual attraction between the races, believe it or not, and we've got plenty of mixed race kiddies. Legislation will be introduced to ban interracial sex and marriage, and good luck with that idea, you dickheads. Of course, that's not going to work. So then we'll have legislation that says if you've got any teeny tiny bit of black human in your DNA, then you are one of those inferior black humans. We whites are elite. We cannot have tainted blood, thank you. One of the scary things for the authorities in that Bacon Rebellion was the teaming up of the blacks and whites. Black slaves and white indentured servants will also team up at times to do a runner. Legislation will be passed to say that plantation owners must have one white indentured servant to every 6 male black humans. That way, we can have a decent number of white militia using those white indentured servants. Great, except there aren't enough white servants to go around. So there'll be a petition off to the House of Commons in London for more indentured servants, please. Oh, that's easy, says Parliament. We shall make it a nice punishment for crimes, and there you go. Thousands of convicts can now come on into America to serve out their time. The white guys will get muskets for militia duties along with corn and cash. None of that stuff for our inferior black guys, and the distinction of status is made nice and clear. You might be poor, white and indentured, you might be total trash, but you are superior to the black guys. Racism, then, was not necessarily a natural process. It was a tool, a device to control the poor. Racism will separate dangerous poor white people from dangerous black slaves using racial contempt. Having mentioned plantation owners, it's time to introduce a new tool that will help the super wealthy guys to continue to get richer, and that is the middle class. Yes, a middle class has emerged with guys like plantation owners, independent farmers or farmers who own their land, artisans and merchants. These guys will help be a buffer against the black slaves, Indians and poor white trash. These growing cities are generating skilled workers. Jobs are protected for white people by government. New York, for example, had a law that no Negro or slave be suffered to work on the bridge as a porter about any goods either imported or exported into this city. In Charleston, the law will prohibit the employment of Negroes in the handicraft trades. The rich guys will praise the middle classes while attacking themselves. Yes, the powerful have often done this. They attack themselves so that we think that they're one of us type of idea. The rich guys will praise the middle classes as good, solid, hard workers while attacking themselves. They'll say the super wealthy are uncaring tax dodgers, not like the marvellous middle classes who care about the welfare of the common smellies. The super wealthy also appeal to the ideals that do not exist, like our liberty, our property, our country, and yada blah. That's not much different now. It's how the wealthy elite get the support of the middle class for them to continue ruling us. Let's check a quote from the Pennsylvania Journal of 1756. The people of this province are of the middling sort, and at present pretty much upon a level. They are chiefly industrious farmers, artificers, or men in trade. They enjoy and are fond of freedom, and the meanest among them thinks he has the right to civility from the greatest. Yeah, there's the freedom word, and as for the people, well, zero mention of the Indians or black guys. But there's nothing going on here except language, and it's language that the wealthy elite will use to get that revolution against England going. Key words like liberty and equality should get enough white people sucked in to fight a revolution without upsetting either slavery or inequality.
Do you hear the people sing, singing the song of angry men? It is the music of the people who will not be slaves again. When the beating of your heart echoes the beating of the drums, there is a life about to start with tomorrow.
1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. 1776, and revolution gets its kicks. Oh, that wasn't very good, was it? Sorry. Important people have come up with a new idea, a concept, something that doesn't exist outside of the human imagination. They will create a nation, a legal entity, and call it the United States of America. USA. USA. They can take nice toys like land and profit and political power from the English big dicks. Wow, fantastic. Even better, they'll run a rebellion against the British, which will stop the poor people running a rebellion against the wealthy elite. Yeah, great. There have been 18 uprisings or rebellions already against the wealthy elite, and one might actually work. Those poor people might actually get their act together and run a successful rebellion. Don't forget, we've told them all to get a gun. On top of that, there have been 6 black rebellions, and the numbers of black humans just keeps rising. More, of course, there's been 40 riots. What is needed is to aim all that revoltingness towards the British. Take the focus off the wealthy elite, or perhaps change the narrative. Yes, a better world when tomorrow comes. Make the wealthy elite the founding fathers. Oh, that's nice. Fathers. And it will help us to all remember we live in a nice patriarchal society with some nice wise dads at the top to guide us all. Marvellous. The 7-year war, which we called the French and Indian War in America, ended 3 years ago with the Frenchies neutralised. The Indians are not neutralised, so they remain a threat, with the only other threat for control being the English. The English had declared all land past the Appalachians? Yeah, I think that's how you say it, to be out of bounds for the colonial expansion. It'd be nice to get rid of that stupid idea. The English can help get this party started by imposing more taxes to pay for their army, but that army has removed our biggest threat, so we don't really need them anymore, nor do we really need English rules. The English, on the other hand, do need more of our cash to spend on, well, whatever they're spending it on. Something sensible, I'm sure. The end of the war has dumped poor people on the streets. It's also the case that the poor can see lots of food, but it's the food that's destined for European markets and not American bellies. Boston and 5% of the population own 50% of the wealth. The lower classes will attend town meetings, have a big old whinge. The thing is, these town meetings vote on stuff and everyone in the room gets a vote, so, oh fuck, the poor are having their say. Oh dear. But here are guys like James Otis and Samuel Adams who understand that they need to mould the opinion of the common smellies. These two guys will become Sons of Liberty. Yeah, there's lots of Sons of Liberty around the place. James Otis in particular was into big speeches. The English brought the writs of assistance, which allowed the customs officials to search anywhere for evidence of smuggling. Otis will say, "It appears to me the worst instrument of arbitrary power, the most destructive of English liberty that was ever found in an English law book." Right now, though, we can have this pair organising the Boston Caucus, and they can give sterling speeches and write stuff to guide the common smellies and show that the real enemy is Vladimir Putin. Oh, no, sorry, it's Britain. If you feel you are worse off this year as compared to last year, then it's Britain. And look out, they are coming for your freedoms. And so we're having a preview of how the US operates. Sleepy Joe right now can empathise with the common smellies. He understands their issues. He can tell you that those issues are very real, and he surely will be doing something to fix it. Just bear in mind that right now, right this minute, he's got to support Israel and its right to defend itself from evil, and he has to help the brave President Zelensky of Ukraine to defeat the evil Russian Vlad. And there are other enemies who hate us for our freedoms. Yeah, for our freedoms, they hate us. But Sleepy Joe will protect your freedoms because this is the best country in the history of everything, and you are lucky to be a citizen of the USA, even if you are common and smelly. Anyway, it's about Otis, not Sleepy Joe. Here's his words. "I am forced to get my living by the labour of my hand," oh fucking bullshit, "and the sweat of my brow, as most of you are, and obliged to go through good report and evil report for bitter bread earned under the frowns of some who have no natural or divine right to be above me, and entirely owe their grandeur and honour to grinding the faces of the poor." Yeah, look, that guy's a lawyer. Yeah, he's not getting his hands dirty. But that there was the type of speech I am referring to. How do we get it today from politicians? "I'm just a humble, common, smelly like you. Yeah, sure, I'm a millionaire, but at heart, I am a humble, common, smelly like you. My great-great-great-grandfather was poor." Otis was also an alcoholic and had mental illness. Yeah, so it goes. The problem with stirring up the mob is that they may go off too soon. That is, before you firmly imprinted the message that it is the English who are the problem. not our dear sweet American filthy rich guys. So a couple of rich guys' houses in Boston will be smashed up because, yeah, we didn't quite get the message. Another sign that we're getting stirred up will be that the Commons Millies want both the ability to vote and have a say, as well as getting some of those yummy government jobs. By 1776, the mob were well and truly stirred up, but it was getting away from us. We want it all directed at England. It showed up in Philadelphia, where we've got guys like Thomas Paine, who launched a full-scale attack on wealth and even on the right to acquire unlimited private property. Riots in New Jersey, riots in New York. It's the wealthy landowners we want to see and do harm to, but of course, they're nowhere near the place. Sorry, they leave middle management in charge and they're the guys that cop it. When the dust settles, some of the guys will be off to courts where landowners will have a nice gaggle of top lawyers, while the poor have, yeah, well, nothing. But the people are on the boil and the wealthy elite need to just calm them down just a little bit, not too much. We want them ready to rebel against the British. In the meantime, the common smellies will get some nice benefits from new policies. This was doubly needed because the poor were starting to appeal to London for assistance against the rich landlords. It's contradictory. In Carolina, a bunch of farmers have organised against the wealthy and corrupt government types. At the same time, in the North, we are nicely going against the British and forgetting the class issues. In Carolina, it'll be insurrection for the farmers. They also note that the assembly is composed of lawyers and clerical types and not farmers. Creatures of the super wealthy are running the show, but farmers, well, they don't get a representative, even though they get to pay lots of tax. Six of these guys will be captured and hanged. Yeah, fuck you, farmers. This mob won't be playing a big part in the Revolutionary War. Most are going to stay neutral and fair enough. The stupid government of Carolina should have looked at the North to see what scraps they were throwing out and then done the same for their farmers. Who cares? The battles will all be in the North, where there will be sufficient to get involved in revolt. There were jobs at stake because the American manufacturers were in competition with the English manufacturers. The North, though, still have the problem of the lowest of the low classes. And lovely, the English can introduce the Stamp Act in 1767, just what we want. Everyone must pay, unless you just simply don't have any money at all, and then you can fucking well go without. The writings at the time tell us it was the ruling class who whipped up the mob over the stamp tax, but once the mob started robbing and destroying the houses of the wealthy elite, the ruling classes got a bit worried. They've been working really hard to stop any insurrections against themselves, and now it seems they might have just started one. The top 10% of the Boston taxpayers had 66% of the wealth. The bottom 30% had bugger all. That also meant no voting for them. The Sons of Liberty are thinking hard about how to turn that aggro against Britain while maintaining their control over the mob. We shall try peaceful protest. Oh, God. A march with the only action to be burn the stamp master in effigy. But then the gentlemen go home and the mob will decide to burn the stamp master's house. The ruling class will set up armed patrols. A town meeting will denounce the violence and say the mob had certainly been very naughty indeed to be burning down houses. They will have certain mob leaders to a dinner to win them over, and that'll work a treat. Once the Stamp Act is repealed, nobody cares about the mob anymore anyway. Parliament will have its next go at taxation and we're ready. The catch cry is no mobs, no confusions, no tumult. Yeah, but suddenly we have to put up with 2,000 soldiers and those idle soldiers start taking jobs away from Bostonians. 5th of March 1770, massacre at Boston. Now, a British soldier was guarding the customs house and there was some sort of altercation with an apprentice. The apprentice gets a whack to the head and starts taunting the soldier to fire his rifle. More people come and warn the soldier that if he fires, he must die for it. The soldier will call for reinforcements and we end up with 8 soldiers and a mob of about 400 who still want to taunt the soldiers. The mob yell out fire and throw small stuff at them and spit on them. Then something a bit larger is thrown and one of our soldiers is down. The soldiers will then fire on the crowd and we have three or four dead and some wounded. The governor will come out and manage to calm it all down, promising the mob a fair inquiry. Yeah, that's great, isn't it? That fair inquiry will acquit six of the eight soldiers, which makes the mob unhappy. The other two had their thumbs branded and were discharged from the army. It'll be a funeral for the dead guy with about 10,000 of Boston's population of 16,000 turning up. So England will just quietly remove the troops from Boston. This is on top of riots in New York, Newport and Rhode Island. There will be a battle between the New York seamen and the British soldiers who have come here to take our jobs. In among all this is the Boston Tea Party, which is the one that gets the big name. The English respond with coercive acts to punish the naughty Massachusetts colonists for their defiance. It closed the port until the colonists were ready to stump up the cash for the destroyed tea. Hang on, say the Americans, you can't punish the entire population for the actions of a few terrorists, unless you're Israel punishing Palestine. The Act also took away the Massachusetts Charter, returning it to direct British rule. Jobs now get handed out exclusively by the King or the Governor.
Will you give all you can give so that a banner may advance? Some will fall and some will live. Will you stand up and take your chance? The blood of the martyrs will water the meadows of France.
Do you hear the people say?
Yeah, I've got a feeling that little revolution's going to go horribly wrong. But it's not about that one, it's about ours. And now would be a good time for us to bang on about their taking away our freedoms. It's a violation of our constitutional rights and our natural rights. I'm one of these natural rights that we no longer go on about. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. They are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Oh, all right, it's still magical stuff. It might not be churchy stuff, but it's still magical. None of these things really exist. It's not real, my dear listener. But it sounds good. Massachusetts is basically under martial law. Their own government has been dissolved. The port, which was essential for the making of the money, was closed, and British troops who have come in have to be put up and we've got to pay for them. Talk about a shit sandwich with no bread. Now the Sons of Liberty, or Sons of Rich Guys might be a bit more appropriate, will urge restraint, particularly on the destruction of rich guys' houses. Who are these brave freedom fighters? Well, I gave you a hint, but here's some quotes. In Newport, Rhode Island, the Sons of Liberty contain some gentlemen of the first figure in town for opulence, sense and politeness. In North Carolina, one of the wealthiest of the gentlemen and freeholders led the Sons of Liberty. Similarly, in Virginia and South Carolina. And New York's leaders, too, were involved in small but respectable business ventures. Okay, the New York guys weren't the super wealthy. In any case, what these leaders want is followers, lots and lots of followers. One of their reasons for wanting all those followers is to can the current system of riots, which seem to end up with rich guys' houses being ransacked and destroyed. Now, the Sons of Liberty groups are revolutionary, and the enemy of the people is the British King. If we just got rid of him, then we would all live happily together, one people united under God. I better have real words. Are not the gentlemen made of the same materials as the lowest and poorest among you? Listen to no doctrines which may tend to divide us, but let us go hand in hand as brothers. Yes, for he who sheds his blood with me this day shall be my... Oh, look, it's so much bullshit, isn't it? how wealthy elite are a bit like Jesus in that they love the poor, humble, common smellies. And yeah, like Henry V with my reference there, going hand in hand as brothers for he who shits, but yeah. What we need, my dear listener, is an influencer who knows his way around the English language. Somebody can really put a sentence together. Come on down, Patrick Henry. Give me liberty or give me death. Oh, shit, that's good, Patrick. They may take our lives, but they'll never take our scones with the jam on top. Yeah, no, that second one's not really him. Smart guy, self-taught lawyer. That's not bad. Good talker, very good talker. He studied the filthy rhetoric. It's also about the language, and our man Patrick Henry can speak dirt poor Virginian. He can reach the common smellies with the common language. He was also a great orator who absolutely knew the power of the pause. Did you like that one? Yeah. To get an idea of the power of the pause, because I don't think I did it very well at all just then. Yeah, no, I don't do it well. But to get an idea of the power of the pause, my dear listener, watch Obama. He's got very masterful pausing. All just devices to suck you in, yeah. At the end of the day, there has to be a message in among the pauses, and the use of the common smelly language will help. The message delivered by Patrick Henry is the unity. Unity, that's what we want, unity of Americans, and the path to relieving the class tensions between the common smellies and their betters was to unite against the filthy British, who are the cause of all our troubles. In the message, there will be very specific charges against the British while being just a bit vague, maybe, about our own problems. Then finish up with the super stirring stuff. Once more into the breach, dear friends, for God, Harry, St. George, and England, or America in this case. Thomas Paine will issue a pamphlet called Common Sense, and I hate it already. Common sense is weasel words for bullshit. Let's see. Society in every state is a blessing, but a government even in its best state is a necessary evil. Oh, okay, I see. In this case, common sense has been used as bait for people to read his stuff. This thing will sell its socks off both in America and France. Now, it's no wonder they've got shit government, so of course they're going to say government is a necessary evil. He can kick off getting rid of the divine right of kings. Now, that's a fairly simple argument to do that. And the one he'll use is Bill the Bastard turned up in 1066 to England just as a hard man thug, really. He muscled his way onto the big chair without the consent of the English, so it's pretty hard to see the invisible hand of God there. Yeah, okay, well, maybe his argument isn't that good because the magic book says that God sometimes gets very annoyed and so sends us a total dick to be the king. With economics, Paine can see no reason why we'd be any worse off without Britain. Our goods can be sold for the same price to Europe. Then it's about the stupid foreign wars that England keeps getting into, and that costs us as well. We should found a mighty nation that isn't into stupid foreign wars. Oh, good fucking luck with that one, mate. And of course I know that the mighty nation is continually into stupid foreign wars right now, but they all just go on the credit card for the grandkids to pay off sometime. Let's get to the big finish. Everything that is right or reasonable pleads for separation. The blood of the slain. The weeping voice of nature cries, 'Tis time to part. What? The weeping voice of nature? Jesus. 25 editions, my dear listener, smash hit. It was one of around 400 pamphlets on the concept of separating from Britain, published in America and England. Both sides of the argument were being debated. Not everyone liked it, though. John Adams, founding father, wasn't too happy because the thing seemed to hint that this new mighty nation should be all democratic. Oh, no. John Adams was a third-generation American. His dad was a churchy type. John became a lawyer and defended our British soldiers in the Boston Massacre thingy. He will eventually take over the presidency from George Washington, and his son John Quincy Adams will also be president. Back to his problem with democracy, and Tom Paine has said that the two houses in England, Lords and Commons, was bullshit and undemocratic. Well spotted. And it's the House of Lords thing that to this day, certainly to me, is totally undemocratic. Look, they just parachuted bloody David Cameron in there so that he could be foreign minister. What a lot of crap. Anyway, Paine said there should be one chamber where the people could be represented. Adams said Paine's plan was so democratical without any restraint or even an attempt at any equilibrium or counterpoise that it must produce confusion and very evil work. Adams thought there needs to be a check on the popular assembly because they rush into stupid ideas. They're stupid, they're common, they're smelly, they're going to make stupid ideas. It needs a body of people like him, senators, to sit in judgment of what the popular mob come up with. There you go. That's why we've got senates. Paine was on the common smelly end of the spectrum, while Adams was on the elite end of the spectrum. But why bugger with all this when we can piss the poms right off with the Continental Congress? First set up in Philadelphia in 1774. Their headquarters will be Independence Hall, which is a bad name for a bunch of guys who are saying they're here to help heal the rift with Britain. Delegates from 12 of the 13 colonies will turn up. Maybe from Georgia, because they're cool with the English right now, by which I mean they depend on British troops to keep them safe from the Indians. The overall mood of the first Congress was, hey, breaking with Britain is a bit drastic, so no, we shouldn't do it. But they aren't treating us right, so let's send them a bit of economic warfare with a boycott on British goods and send a petition to George saying we want a redress of our grievances. Parliament will get that petition and have a chat about it, and that's about it. Nice cup of tea, ice bobo or two, and a chat. George will open Parliament with a nice speech about what turds these American chappies are. The Congress will meet again, and Tom Jefferson will draft up the Declaration of Independence, and John Adams will lead the debates in favour, and now we've got a provisional government and the adoption of the Declaration of Independence. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute a new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organising its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Yeah, perhaps the Americans should have another read of that passage right now. February 1775, and Britain has worked out that apart from Boston, they aren't in control of anything. The House of Commons will make an address to George saying the Americans are revolting. We'll have a good hard think about their grievances, but these American chappies need to fill out the right forms. They didn't fill them out properly. In the meantime, of course, we stand by your Majesty at the hazard of our lives and properties. Oh, that's enough. We've strayed well and truly into the bullshit. Bottom line is, English up for biff. Yeah, the Americans can't lose, can they? They've got Mel Gibson on the team. 19th of April, 1775, Battles of Lexington and Concord. The Congress had been calling for brave boys to train in the militia, so there is a force there. The British in Boston knew that the militia had supplies stored at Concord. The militia knew that the British knew, though those supplies had been moved. The British don't know that, so they came up with a top-secret plan to move on Concord. Off they go, so it'll be a mad dash for Paul Revere and others, but no yelling, the British are coming. In come the British for some gun exchange, and the British will have the best of it. Then they can have a good poke around and march back to Boston. On the way back, they'll find more militia coming out for a pot shot at them. That then makes it an American win. Final scores have the English at 73 dead, 174 wounded, 53 missing, with the Americans on 49 dead, 39 wounded, and 5 missing. The independence thing is like a meme. It will catch on. North Carolina declares independence and all British laws are gone. A town, Malden, in Massachusetts, likewise will call for independence. All that stuff helped get the Declaration of Independence as a big thing for the population. Shall we check their grievances against the king, who's accused of dissolving colonial governments, controlling judges, sending swarms of officers to harass our people, sending in armies of occupation, cutting off colonial trade with other parts of the world, taxing the colonists without their consent, waging war against them, and transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation and tyranny. And in our time, the US is acting just like that king. Yeah. But the Declaration of Independence is working a treat and uniting the people except women, Indians and black humans. But it's working a treat and uniting about a third of the people. But they're the important ones, the white men with penises. Well, at least the Indians are mentioned in the thing, and the black humans are hinted at in our Rage Against George. He has excited domestic insurrections among us and endeavoured to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes and conditions. Yeah, oh God, my dear listener, you see, it's all the fault of the Indians. They start the beef every time, it's them that start it, and we have every right to defend ourselves. I guess I should mention the practice of scalping. It's been going on for about 20 years. A proclamation of the Legislature of Massachusetts of November the 3rd, 1755, declared the Penobscot Indians rebels, enemies and traitors, and provided a bounty for every scalp of male Indian brought in, £40. For every scalp of such female Indian or male Indian under the age of 12 years that should be killed, that is, a child, £20. Oh, decent money to be made there then. Thomas Jefferson had a go at including some stuff about no more black humans coming here, but the others made him take it out again. Tom, of course, himself was a slave owner who seems to have not liked slavery. On that basis, the reasonable conclusion is that he was a pragmatist. I don't like the law, but while it's the law, I'll use it to my best advantage type of thing. Yeah, not terribly ethical, but pragmatic. It's unlikely the authors of this thing saw it as some sort of declaration that we will be in a utopia. It's a document designed to promote a revolution against Britain. Most of the words are about how bad George has been, with a note that, hey, Poms, we did warn you that this would happen, and now it has. The declaration was based on the ideas proposed by John Locke. If your government is no good, you overthrow it and start a new one. John Locke had written all that stuff at the time of the revolution in England. I'm sure you fondly recall Charles I having his head off. The revolution took England one large step towards the type of democracy we have now. We can look back at it and say it was about the wealthy elite landowners, but it introduced a rather large check on the king's powers. It ended those monopolies, which are so bad for us, and gave business the right to expand and grow. Not that any of that helped the common smellies much. It wasn't just in America that we had rights. The poor in England have been into rights and strikes over the high cost of bread versus the low amount of wages. A general dissatisfaction unhappily prevailed among the several of the lower orders of the people. This ill temper, which was partly occasioned by the high price of provisions and partly proceeded from other causes, too frequently manifested itself in acts of tumult and riot, which were productive of the most melancholy consequences. But really, we should get on and have that Declaration of Independence read out nice and clear in public. Yeah, marvellous. 4 days later, and the Boston Committee of Correspondence ordered people to turn up at the Common for a military draft. But the word is out that the rich don't have to turn up. they can just send some money, while the poor can do the hard work, clean the dunnies and do the dying. Writes with the chant being, tyranny is tyranny, let it come from whom it may. Yeah, good on you common smellies, you've figured it out. Doesn't matter whether it's the British or the Americans, it's tyranny. Oh dear, my dear listener, the USA may not be off to the marvellous start that we've all kind of been led to believe. The population then and now do not want war, thanks all the same. Sure, there are disaffected people who have lost their jobs or had to put up a British soldier or two, but the majority of the population have not been affected, so would be happy to stay home and not put their lives on the line for some bit of paper that wants them to believe they were born equal to somebody born into a super rich family. On the other hand, right from the start, these American chappies have all had a gun and learned to shoot, so you have an armed population. The leaders will have to get these people excited about a war against the British. At the end of the day, it will work with lots of the population going into military service for a bit. Then they have to put up with local committees and lack of supplies due to corruption, and men with guns calling themselves revolutionary soldiers, and so having agreed to military service, they'll find it's a bit of a shit show and go back home. There will also be people who will side with Britain. Not everyone wants to go boldly ahead in some new country. They perhaps don't believe the hype that the problems they face are all caused by Britain. John Adams estimated that about a third of the people were with the revolution, a third against, and a third just couldn't give a fuck, leave me alone. Alexander Hamilton wrote that our countrymen have all the folly of the ass and the passiveness of the sheep. They are determined not to be free. Oh yeah, it's the freedom thing again. Some parts like South Carolina just stayed out of it all. They had a slave rebellion back in 1739, perhaps about 50 slaves dead and 20 white guys dead. The uprising was led by some black guys who were probably from the Congo. These were not a bunch of illiterate, uneducated humans. They spoke Portuguese and were Catholics, and they were actually trying to get to Spanish Florida, where the rumour was that Catholics would all be freed. The point is, South Carolina's too paranoid about another slave rebellion to be sending off armed white men to kill the British. Most of the colonies wanted a classy militia. Excluded will be Indians, black humans, even if they're free, white indentured servants, and free white men who have no stable home. Join up now, they think so, the guys who are considered worthy. Yeah, so recruiting less respectable white guys will be undertaken. The military numbers will be helped along nicely by including the poor white trash, and it's these guys who will end up being the majority of the army.
I promise, Papa, please don't
Susan,
go.
Susan, I promise. I'll come back. I'll come back. You believe me? You know, you make me very happy.
Yes, how many dear old dads have promised they'll come back nice and safe and sound so that they can live happily ever after? War is marvellous for governments, or in this case, the ruling elite. It's the same idea whether you're the government or the ruling elite. If you're the ruler, war dominates everything else, and so other issues can be dealt with nice and quietly on the side. The media is focused on the war. It also serves to unite we common smellies. We all have to be on Team Us, whether or not we benefit from that war or its outcome. Is Australia better off for us because we sent troops to Iraq and Afghanistan? Yeah. Our politicians will tell us that we are surely much safer now. Yeah, right. Back then, this will allow Connecticut to pass a law mandating military service for all males between 16 and 60. And when they say all males, I mean, oh, lots of them. But not blacks, or Indians, of course. Or government officials, churchy types, Yale students, and teachers of Yale, and guys who can slip us £5. The penalty for not turning up is a slammer where you will stay until you promise to fight and die for this glorious revolution. What is happening now is that our new type government is acting pretty much the same as the British. Men are being pressed into military service against their wishes. Yeah, that doesn't sound like freedom. If you try to get out of it, then it'll be the slammer, definitely not freedom. Once in the military, you will again find it the same. There is a big distinction between the officers and the men. You need to know your place and keep it. Whippings are handed out for naughtiness. It's a case of meet the new boss, same as the old boss. But the marvellous freedoms will be along any day now, along with the return of baby Jesus. We've almost got this revolution party started, but I just want to return to England and mention Hannah Lightfoot, aka the Fair Quaker. She's an English girl living in Westminster. She married Isaac Axford, but at age 24, she just disappeared. Her dear old mum said, "I am not certain whether my said daughter be living or dead, I not having seen or heard from her for about 2 years last past." Her husband will describe himself as a widower and remarry. Hannah Lightfoot, the Fair Quaker, will then end up in this very podcast being mentioned because there is a story that she took George's virginity when he was 15 and that they secretly married and she had a royal bastard. Very bloody unlikely, my dear listener. I mean, for a start, if you're secretly married, the kid's not going to be a bastard, is it? Yeah, some gossip monger haven't got their story quite right. George seems to have been very unusual in that he was dedicated to Charlotte and did not take a mistress. George, though, will go a bit nuts from time to time and start thinking he was married to Elizabeth, the Countess Pembroke. She will complain about all the bloody love letters he keeps sending her. But back to Charlotte, and George is all over her. Here is Sir Joshua Reynolds writing about George coming home after inspecting warships at Portsmouth. "When he came to Kew, he was so impatient to see the Queen that he opened the chaise himself and jumped out before any of his attendants could come to his assistance. He seized the Queen, whom he met at the door, round the waist and carried her in his arms into the room. I trouble with these particulars as everything relating to the King is worth hearing." Charlotte, in return, will find that George is well and truly enough as a partner and a best friend. The two have the same likes, but more importantly, dislikes. They both dislike ceremony and expense. They both do like duty, piety, philanthropy. They both really dislike free thinking. "Oh, no thanks, none of that. We've got established beliefs and knowledge. No need to do any thinking for ourselves at all." They like to dine together, a simple meal at 4 p.m. They can chat about music, what they're reading, theatre, botany, and go for a nice long walk. They like non-work days when they'll be off to Richmond for some gardening. Charlotte might visit her school for girls at Datchet, where poor kiddies can go and learn the art of spinning. Back to madness, and now George seems a bit interested in Lady Georgiana Buckley. Eventually there will be talk that he's into giving a bit to a housemaid called Sally. No basis for that accusation is given, so it's probably more bullshit. When George is nuts, he will blaspheme and swear loudly. Charlotte will have a hard time living with this, and her strain will affect the family. Eventually, her hair will turn white, and people put it down to her having to look after Nutty George. But I'm afraid that's where I'm going to leave it this week. We'll come back and pick this up next week, I think. We'll talk a little bit more about George and maybe his nuttiness or something else. It'll work out. There's a revolution going on in America. Why on earth would you want to stop being British to become American? I don't know. I guess it's about the money and the food and staying alive. To get us into some historical fiction was what I was supposed to say. Soldier of Fortune by Edward Marston. It's a novel. It's a boy's own adventure, so don't expect too much from it. Our hero, Captain Rawson, is a soldier who is also a spy part-time. As a spy, he's a lot like a James Bond type without the gadgets. That is, he gets the job done and gets the girl. As for soldiering, this will be Queen Anne's War, so our hero is with the Duke of Marlborough, John Churchill, and this will take us to the Battle of Blenheim. Our man has to help win the war while a couple of professional assassins are on the case looking for him. It's a bit of a fun read for the bus on your way to work. Also, this week I decided to have another look at the Ridley Scott movie Robin Hood to try and remember why I didn't like it. That's silly, isn't it? But there you go, that's what I did. So, Robin Hood was made in 2010 with our Russell Crowe in the leading role, and another Australian, Kate Blanchett, will be made Marion. Let's see, you've got William Hurt as Marshal Bill. Marshal Bill's not really explained that well, so he's just a noble in the movie. And this is the backstory of Robin Hood. I actually quite enjoyed it this time around, for some reason. I don't know why I didn't enjoy it the first time, did the second time. I guess, I don't know. Look, it's worth a look if you haven't seen it, 2010. It's made by Ridley Scott, so anything Ridley Scott makes is worth a look. Robin Hood. But for us, it's just a matter of what we go out with, and what we are going out with will be Rima and Selena Gomez. Calm down. Hope to see you next week. Bye.
I go use the